So I don't know if I'm the only trans person who feels this way. But when I think about my past, it's a blurring effect, right? Hmm. So when you get to a point in your transition where you feel like you are more or less yourself, how far in your past do you look back, right? Hmm. Because anything before that moment, you didn't know who you were. You were a little boy or a little girl, and that wasn't you, right? So when you talk about your past, you honestly have to rewrite it. I think trans people are some of the few people who rewrite their own past to fit the consistency of their narrative.
Interesting.
Right? So obviously, as a trans person, I grew up a little boy, right? But if I'm meeting someone for the first time and they're like, oh, tell me about your childhood, I'm not going to say when I was a little boy, right? You're going to say when I was a little girl, but then that automatically causes you to rethink all those memories from the perspective of a little girl. And you don't know how to do that. Because your world was not viewed that way. So it's just easier not to talk about your childhood at all.
I'd only known Tia a few weeks before she decided to share her story with me, so this interview was a big part of how I got to know her. I consider it an honor to have heard her story, and to have the privilege of passing it on to you. As for the rest, I'll let Tia speak for herself. Please be aware that this episode contains discussion of rape, transphobia, and homophobia. I'm Sophie Kaner, and this is Edges.
Do you think of yourself as having been a little boy or a little girl when you,
like, neither, right? Because I didn't know what it was like to be a little girl, but I certainly didn't feel like a little boy either. Mm-hmm. So that's why my childhood is kind of, I'd say, glazed over by this, by moments, right? So, like, I will remember distinct moments, but my memories oftentimes take myself out of it. Like, I become a silhouetted image in my own memories, in my own childhood, because I don't know what to input there. I don't know what...
Like a lens.
Exactly. Yeah. What scope to put from there. So, the earliest memories I can draw from would be high school.
Okay.
Right? I'd say that was the moment... High school was the time when kids were having sex and puberty and the idea of man and woman, or rather the perception of what a boy and a girl is, what a man and a woman is, started to become more of a caricature. But what else did we have to go off of, right? In high school, it was like the jocks were the – if there was some sort of scale, right, the jocks were the ultimate men and the really – pretty preppy girls were the ultimate in femininity, and everything kind of fell in between there. So you had to find yourself somewhere along this, like, really ridiculous scale.
Yeah.
So high school was a time for me when I would get picked on a lot. I got picked on quite a bit, because I wasn't flamboyant. I kind of try to keep to myself. I try to kind of keep a low profile. Mm-hmm.
Were you a very good student?
I was. I was a good student. I wasn't a great math student. I don't do math. I don't do the maths, the numbers. I'm just not.
I have people to do that for me.
We don't get along. Okay? That's all I'm gonna say. I just can't count on them. that was good. I always honestly just kept to myself. And I remember one day, the first time I'd ever really been in a relationship, it was in high school. And that was the first time I was ever in what I would consider my first relationship. I had fooled around a lot with other people in different schools, which that's another thing. I think... For trans people, we discover ourselves sexually before we discover ourselves internally.
Interesting.
And that might not be universal, but that was certainly my experience.
Okay.
We oftentimes become validated through our sex because we're a thing. We're like a we're a porn search. Hmm. We're a guilty pleasure. Mm-hmm. And especially in high school, where boys are already like experimenting as it is. One of the running jokes when I used to go to school in Texas was that people thought I was a lesbian with a funny name, right? Because I haven't looked that different growing up. I just, you know, I just had short hair and I wore androgynous clothing. I didn't dress flamboyantly. I didn't dress masculine. I just wore big things. Yeah. Like, I didn't have a set gender. And my voice wasn't that much different. So people just assumed I was just some sort of, like, weird artsy-fartsy lesbian.
Nice.
Right?
Love those.
So, love them. So I used to hang out a lot more with the girls, and that obviously didn't help.
Yeah.
But what I did find funny was that I had a lot of sexual experiences, mostly oral sex, but a lot of TMI, sorry.
No, please.
A lot of sexual experiences with, like, my old brother's older friends or people that I knew who would, like, insult me to my face. Wow. But then when no one was looking, you know.
Yeah. And how you were in high school.
I was in high school. Oh my God. So that takes its toll on you. Oh, just like, sure. So you, I've become a master at flirting. because when you're, this was before my transition. So when you are someone who's on the cusp of transness, you learn to flirt subtly. Because you can't do it out loud. You can't do it big and out in the open because you'll get ridiculed. And yeah. Exactly. So you find more subtle ways to do it. So I am a master
I believe it.
At flirting. So if anyone has any questions, please hit me up. I can tell you.
Right in.
So I remember being in Spanish class, and there was this guy, always had his nose in a book. This really big guy. He was very social, but choosy about who he socialized with. And I remember one day I was looking at some sort of, like, I don't know if it was looking at a magazine or I was looking at something. I was really into anime and video games. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at something that was, like, video game related. He turns around, he looks at it, and he was like, oh, you like anime or you like video games? I was reading a manga. That's what it was. He was like, oh, you like manga? I was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, cool. I got ones you can read. I'm like, who are you? Like, that's my first thought. I was like, who... Excuse me. Sorry.
Who are you?
Yeah, like, do I know you? While this was happening, he was paying attention to my reaction. Yeah. But all I could think about was the reaction of everyone else, right? I'm this, like, strange black kid who everyone thinks is a lesbian, who people make fun of because they think I'm gay and all this stuff. And this big hulking man kid dude is, like, talking to me about this video game with complete disregard of what people are saying or people are joking. And so some of the kids in the back would make jokes and stuff like that, and he would just flip them off and then just keep talking to me. And that was the first time I had ever felt like someone didn't care. Right? Like, that someone didn't care what other people thought about them. And that's how we became friends. We became friends that way because I felt a certain degree of safe with him. Like, when we were hanging out, the rest of the world never penetrated that space because he really went out of his way to make that never matter.
He just wouldn't acknowledge it.
He wouldn't acknowledge it. And also, to be fair, like, he's built like fucking Hercules. And so who was going to mess with them, right? Who was going to, like, I remember the football coach would always try to get him to join the team, and he just was not a jock.
Was he black too? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's also something that really surprised me because, you know, black people, I love black people. I love our people. But we have had such a tumultuous time accepting the other. I had such a hard time accepting anything that's different. And I really wish that wasn't the case. But so we would hang out all the time. And I remember the first time we ever got physically intimate. And now I'm not going to go into extreme detail, but I will.
Say anything you want.
I just remember hanging out at his house one day. And we were, I was sleeping on the floor and he was sleeping in his bed. And it's so funny because anyone who's ever been in a situation where they're around someone they're attracted to in a quiet setting, you can hear your own heartbeat. Like, you can feel your own heartbeat, hear it, and, like, you can hear breathing, especially if things get quiet.
Yeah.
And if you've ever spent the night with a crush, right?
Oh my God.
You can't actually sleep.
Oh my God.
Right? Because you'll sleep, but then the moment you hear them moving around, you wake up because you're just like, maybe it's gonna happen. Like,
I'm tense. I'm sweating. You are painting a picture.
Everyone knows that feeling. Yes. Everyone, right? So we're laying in his room, and I'm on the floor, and it's dark. He's in his bed. And I don't know how the subject came up, but I remember telling him, because we were very open with each other. I remember telling him about like some of my earlier sexual experiences with, you know, these guys. And he was like, oh, okay. And that was it. And I was like, okay, that was the end of that. And then it got quiet for, I'd say, 5 minutes. And then he goes, would you want to try that with me? And I was like,
oh my God.
And I was like, I was at a loss. I couldn't. I mean, I did. But I what I mean to say is I couldn't wrap my head around what was happening. And truth be told, to this day, and I'm a very sexually experienced person, but to this day, when I have sex with someone whom I'm very, very attracted to, mm-hmm. I still get that same feeling.
Sure.
Like, I'm not so, like, high and mighty on my sexual self that it's just, like, sex is like, oh, yeah.
Oh, no big deal.
Thank you. That's your punch card. You get three more, like, and then you'll get a free latte. Like, I'm not so callous about sex that I feel like when I have sex with someone attractive that it's, you know, as some sort of caliber of my own sexual attraction. I still get that, like, I can't believe this happened
yes,
feeling.
Yes.
And so we fooled around, and that was it. Now, usually when I fool around with someone, the immediate thought afterwards is that that's it, that it's game over now. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not going to hang out. We're not, it's kind of over, which begs the question why I kept doing it, but whatever. But no, the very next day it was fine. Like, we didn't talk about it, but we were still just as close and whatever. So I remember one day, when we were hanging out, I pulled him aside and I said, hey, I want to let you know I've got feelings for you. I don't expect reciprocation. Mm-hmm. I don't expect you to feel the same way.
Wow.
I just needed to get that off my chest, right?
That's so mature. How old were you?
So 16? 16 going on 17? But that's also, so I didn't have a definition for what trans was, right? Like, most people don't. Like, the only exposure you really get to transness is through, like, Mari Povich. And the only exposure you had to trans people were sideshow freaks who people made jokes about.
Yes.
That's just what it was. So I never saw myself as trans because I was like, well, if that's what trans is, that's certainly not what I am.
Right.
But I also didn't think of myself as gay. But, so I remember telling him, you know, all these things, and his reaction was like, okay, well, thank you for telling me. Don't be afraid. I think you're still an amazing person and we're still good friends. That, obviously I was hurt, but again, I didn't have no expectations. I was just more relieved that it wasn't going to be the end of our friendship. So as far as I was concerned, things were just going to keep going on as they had been.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that night, we were all going to go to the flea market. This is in North Carolina, so, like, the flea market was the thing to do.
Okay.
Ugh. tragedy. And me and him are sitting in the back seat, but we're, like, sitting kind of on opposite ends. And I'm, like, feeling that, like, ugh, I'm such an idiot kind of feeling, right? A little bit of information about this guy. He was really, really into Japanese culture, like most of us weeby nerds are. And one of the things that, if you know anything about Japanese culture, do you know? Well, obviously, you have Japanese.
I don't actually know a ton about Japanese culture. You've lived in Japan, right?
Yes.
So you may know more than me. But
well, have you ever heard of the red string?
Mm-mm.
So there's a saying that two people who are meant to be or have strong bonds are connected by a red string,
oh.
right? Keep that in mind.
Okay.
It's about to show. It plays its part in the story. So
I'm so excited.
I'm over here, like, looking out the window all sad and longing like it's a freaking indie film.
Like,
yeah, like, it's like an indie film. And I hear him, like, opening candy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel him take my hand and then start to wrap something around my finger.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, what are you
doing? Oh, my God.
And I look, and he's got red vine licorice.
Oh, my God.
Like, the red string
oh
licorice.
Oh, my God.
And he tied his goddamn pinky with mine with
oh my God.
Red string licorice candy. And he was like, you and me, we are going to be connected forever.
I'm freaking out.
I was freaking out. I was like, what do I do?
Oh my God.
So, like, I was in a weird place of panic, right? For the one, this person whom I have crazy feelings for is basically doing probably the most out of the ordinary romantic thing a human being can do.
Oh my God.
In high school.
Yeah.
And at the same time, two friends in the front who don't even know that we have this thing. They're not, these two friends are not of the queer culture whatsoever.
Okay. Are they boys?
Yeah,
boys.
Two guys. I'm like panicking a little bit. And that's such a sad feeling that I could not fully enjoy what was happening because my fear of that judgment that they would have, not even to me, that because I'm used to being judged.
Yeah.
Him, right? So I have a huge fear, and this will come in later in when I start telling you about my fiance. Mm-hmm. I've always been stricken with this fear that those who are around me have to deal with the same slings and arrows that I do. And I was born with the armor to take it because this is my path to walk, right? Mm. I can accept anything that happens to me. What I can't accept is that those who choose to love me, choose to walk with me, have to also suffer. And this came through because after that night, after that moment, you know, him and I talked and he was just like, I love you too. And let's give this a shot. And I was like, okay, but we're going to obviously have to keep it between him and I. There were friends that we did tell, because we couldn't just keep it to ourselves. It just became too hard.
Right.
And they were fine with it. So like we would be around each other, we'd be holding each other and they would be cool with it. But there were obviously some times we had to keep it secret. Mm-hmm. But people in school did start to notice we were hanging out with each other a lot more.
Right.
And he started to get into fights.
Okay.
He started to have to defend himself from it because he's this big dude and people didn't understand like why is such a big black guy like yourself doing such gay shit, you know? And he didn't, I don't think it bothered him. I think it bothered him to see how much it affected me, that I'm just like, maybe we shouldn't do this, maybe you should stay away from me. Like, he's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I worked so hard to get to this place where I realize how I feel about you. I'm not going to let these dumbasses fucking ruin that. So he started getting a lot more fights. And that is, to this day, again, why I have such a hard time showing public displays of affection. I'm bad at it.
I see.
Dating me is great because I'm fucking phenomenal. But like, hello. But like, actual public displays of affection, very difficult.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Sure.
I get nervous. I get hot. I get uncomfortable.
Gosh.
So the next events that I'm about to describe caused me to implode completely, where I didn't have any sense of value. I want to call him my boyfriend. His mother was not a huge fan of me. She did not like me at all. Her boyfriend, however, he was a little different. Her boyfriend, despite being this like super heteronormative black man, seemed to think differently of me. Everyone's got a fetish. I remember one day. So when we would go over to his house, I didn't think anything of it. Like, I didn't, like, the way he would say certain things or look at me or whatever, I didn't think much of it. I didn't have a very high sense of self-value at the time. So I had a hard time thinking that I was attractive. Even now, you've heard me talk about this. I think I'm a 5 at best. Don't heavy sigh. Jesus Christ. Anyway.
We'll have a conversation about this at another time.
So I remember one day, I was living on a military base. So like, you had to have your military card around, or they would do like roadblocks every once in a while to check. And they oftentimes will check your license as well. So I remember one day I had left my license over at his house and I was like, and I was a stickler for the rules at the time. I was like, My boyfriend's mother's boyfriend answered the phone and he's like, no, he's not there. And I was like, hey, do you see my license there? And he was like, let me go check, I can't find it. And I was like, okay. He was like, do you want to come over here and look for it? And I was like, well, I can't drive. He was like, well, I'll just pick you up and you can come over here and do it. I was like, okay. So he comes and he picks me up.
Yeah.
And we go inside and I go into my boyfriend's room to find it. And it's just sitting there.
Just obviously.
It's obvious. Like, yeah. So for him, he's like, I can't find it. I was like, that's weird. And so he gets on the phone and he's talking with my boyfriend's mom. But I'm noticing, like, I'm sitting on the couch waiting to go. Mm-hmm. But I'm noticing, like, going through the house, like, locking doors and closing windows. And I'm like, To kind of just gloss over the next few minutes, exactly what you think happened. But he wasn't hyper-aggressive or forceful with it. But he was very, like, prodding. You know what I'm saying? He was very, like, do this, do that. And, like, then, like, would force and move and, like, and I was just like, what the fuck is happening with my life right now? And I'm frail-bodied something. I was a frail-bodied something then. And I just kind of was more afraid of what could happen than what was happening, right? And so I remember getting in the car afterwards and just like stone-faced and him driving me home and him saying, listen, if you tell anyone about this, I will make sure you and, you know, your boyfriend will never see each other ever again.
Oh my God.
And I was like, okay, like, what else could I say? And I remember going upstairs, jumping in the shower and just like throwing up profusely, like projectile vomiting, and just like curling up in a ball in the shower and like, what is my life? Like, these things don't happen outside of Lifetime TV, you know? Like, it's just so ugh. And so from that moment on, anytime we would go to his house, I would just stay in the car. And he was like, what are you doing? Like, my boyfriend was like, what are you doing? Why are you staying in the car? I'm like, it's fine. We're fine. Everything's fine. I'll just stay out here. But his mom's boyfriend would be like, what is so-and-so doing in the car? They should come inside.
Oh, God.
And I was like, no, I'm fine. And I remember one day we were going to go out to dinner, right? Him and I were going to go out. There was this Chinese buffet that we loved. It was bomb. And we'd always go there for dinner. And we were going to go there for dinner one day. And he had to go to his house to pick up some money. So I stayed out in the car. And the boyfriend came out and he was like, you should come inside. And I was like, I'm fine. And he's like, well, someone, your boyfriend has, he didn't say my boyfriend, but I'm just going to call him A because my boyfriend's name starts with A.
Sure.
So A has some chores to do to get the money to go out. And I was like, okay, I'll just wait and then come inside. And then A was like, just come inside, just wait inside. And I was like, okay. So I'm inside in the kitchen by the door. A is in the other side of the house vacuuming and cleaning, and the boyfriend is staring at me in the most nauseating way. Oh my God. Then he comes over to me, starts like kissing on my neck and stuff like that, and was just like, if A wasn't here, I would take you away from here.
Oh my God.
And I was like, all right, let's go. And so we left. As we're driving, I broke down. I couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't hold it anymore. So like, I just broke down and he's like, what is wrong?
Oh,
and I told him, I have never seen rage in a human being like I saw in him that day.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm gonna kill him. I'm gonna kill him. And I was like, well, you can't say anything because he'll tell your mom and you know what your mom's gonna do.
Right.
And I don't wanna lose you. So imagine being living under the same roof with the man who raped your girlfriend. You know, like every day and having to pretend like everything's fine.
Can't imagine.
And so we went on like this for a while. And I remember our senior year, it was about, say, 2 months, 3 months away from graduation. And I think everything was fine. Everything wasn't fine, but it was like we had at this point been able to keep up the charade of him not knowing, whatever. But one day, A, and this guy get into an argument, and I guess it just comes out.
Oh, my God.
He's just like, I know what you did, and blah, blah, blah. And he panics, and he's like, what? Oh, what are you talking about? Blah, blah, blah. And he goes to A's mom and tells A's mom that we had been secretly dating. And I remember being at the house, at my house, minding my own business, and I get a phone call and I pick up the phone and all I hear is yelling and screaming and cursing in the background. And I'm like, and then I hear A's voice just go like, she knows, and then hangs up. my stomach dropped to the pit of like despair, really. Like it was like, I could not, I felt numb all over and hot at the same time. I didn't know what was going to happen. I knew nothing. The next day, I noticed, because we shared a few classes. So the next day, I noticed that his desk was separate from mine. And we got called into like the principal's office. And the principal was like, A's mother has informed me that you two are not to be around each other. And so literally everywhere we went in that school, they'd separated us in the school, in the fucking school. Like if we were ever seen with each other, an administrator was to separate us. It was crazy. Like I couldn't believe what was happening. And we found ways to sneak around. Obviously we found safe havens. There were a few teachers that, you know, was like, I don't know what's going on, but it's stupid. And like there were moments. It was like this for a while. Now fast forward to graduation. I knew I had to get out of there. I was like, I have to leave. I'm going to an art school in Florida. You gotta come with me. You've gotta get out of here. And he was like, my mom's not gonna let me go anywhere. I don't remember how I got this news, but I remember the feeling. His dad lived in England, and his mom made the decision that she was gonna ship him off to England.
Wow.
So after graduation, he was going to be gone. That was it. And I remember the night we said goodbye. I said, this is your life. You can make it. Like, you can decide. You don't have to stay under her thumb. You can fight it if you want. I can help. And he was like, there's nothing I can do. And that was the last goodbye I had with him. We kept in touch as much as we could before I went to college. And the whole time he kept saying he would find his way back somehow. That never actually happened. Just to kind of fast forward, we met once, several years after we had been separated. We met once, but at that point in time, we were already different people. Yeah. I love him dearly to this day, and he loves me dearly to this day, and we're just different people now. We've grown up. But the saddest part of our relationship is it never ended.
Right.
It was severed. So I don't know what could have happened between us. All I know is that that was the first love I ever had. And he knew Tia before Tia existed.
Next time on Edges, the second half of Tia's story. Yep, this one's a two-parter. I promise it'll be worth the wait. If you want to support Edges Podcast, the best ways to do that are to leave a rating or review on your podcast app, or follow at Edges Podcast on Twitter. If you tweet at the show, I might read your tweet in the credits. You can also pledge to the show's Patreon by going to patreon.com/edgespodcast. That's patreon.com/edgespodcast. For $2 per month, you'll receive a thank you in the show notes of each episode. For $4, you'll receive episodes 3 days early. For $7, you'll access bonus material that I cut from the episode. And for $10, you'll hear me thank you by name in these closing credits. Please consider supporting the show in whatever way you can, as I literally cannot do it without you. Thank you so much to my $10 Patreon supporters, Angel Acevedo, Benjamin Redman, Caroline Seidman, Colby, James, Kirsten Griffith, Red L, and Reese. You are all bringing me so much closer to my goal of being able to pay back my expenses on this podcast, and I think you're super cool. I appreciate you more than I can say. On Twitter, KnitFreak at CW Seidman tweeted, I needed a little time to settle my feelings, but I'm now able to discuss without all caps level emotions. Sophie Kaner has added a world of good to my life with the new Edges podcast. I adored Noah's story. It was definitely one that I could relate to, and I appreciate his sharing and Sophie's gentle guidance through the episode. I can't wait to hear further experiences that I know will be foreign and different to my own over future episodes. Thanks, KnitFreak. I can't wait for you to hear them too. Sky at Sky's Book Corner tweets, spent my lunch break today listening to the first ep of Edge's podcast and having a lot of feelings. I don't know if I can put into words how that interview made me think and feel, other than to say I've never felt that kind of solidarity before. So thank you, Sophie Kaner, for that. You're welcome, Sky, and thank you for listening. I'm so glad that the show has been meaningful to you so far. In this week's bonus track, Tia talks about how she chose her name, the intersection of being trans and being black, and how she conceptualizes men versus women. The Edges logo is by Alice Chung, and original music is by Ryan Vibert. Edges podcast is created and produced by me, Sophie Kaner.